Dhamma is something that's always in the world. The Dhamma as the truth. In one of the suttas we chant, the Buddha says, whether Tathagatas arise or they don't arise, they're truths that are just true across the board. All fabrications are inconstant, all fabrications are stressful. All Dhammas are not self. It's always true. Now, teachings about the Dhamma, those are not always here. As the Buddha foresaw, his teachings would disappear. We call it the disappearance of the true Dhamma. Saddhamma is the term he used. What's going to have to happen? What's interesting is how he defines that term. He says, when counterfeit Dhamma appears, the true Dhamma has disappeared. In the same way that when counterfeit money appears, then true money disappears. Notice that. The simple fact of counterfeit money doesn't mean that there is no true money out there. It simply means that you've got to be really careful. You can't trust your money anymore. You can't just take it out of your pocket and use it to buy things. And you can't accept money from just anybody. You've got to test it carefully. And it's the same when counterfeit Dharma appears. You can think about what it was like when the Buddha was awakened and there were arahants all over the place. You could listen to their Dharma and trust it. There are cases in the canon where someone goes and asks a series of questions of one of the Buddha's disciples and then goes and asks the same questions of the Buddha himself and gets precisely the same answer. That's what it was like when the true Dharma had not yet disappeared. Now, it's obvious that the true Dhamma has disappeared. In fact, it disappeared a long time ago, as long as other versions of the Dhamma came up, particularly the teaching that says that Dhammas don't really arise or pass away. We have all kinds of versions of the Dhamma around now. You may remember that image from the canon of the blind man and the elephant. Well, originally it was used to describe sectarians of other religions. And the fact that their Dhamma was very partial. One blind man feels the trunk and he says the elephant's like a hose, another one feels the tail, so the elephant's like a broom. And they're fighting over it. Well, the Chinese version, apparently, is that this represents different takes on the Dhamma itself. Everybody's take on the Dhamma, they say, is partial. That doesn't quite fit in with the Buddha's image of the counterfeit money. In other words, there really is true money out there, but you've got to watch out for the counterfeit. And we can't simply say, well, let's everybody agree that everybody's Dharma is okay. It's like saying all the money, true and counterfeit money, is all equal. But it's not. If the money is counterfeit and you take it back to the treasury, they won't accept it. So you've got to be really careful. In some cases, it's pretty obvious. I was reading someone saying recently they didn't understand why the Buddha was so down on sex and lust. It was obviously because he had spent too much time with his austerities. And back in the days of the Buddha, that would have been laughed out of the Sangha. There's a story about a novice staying out in the woods, and this prince comes along, going out for exercise for the morning. He says, I'd like to ask you a question. Now, the novice apparently had some experience with this prince. It was Jayasena was his name. He says, I'd rather not answer your question because you wouldn't understand the answer. And the prince says, well, I might. And so the novice says, okay, I'll give you the answer, but don't argue, okay? The prince says, okay. The question is this. Understand that there are monks who have overcome sensual desire. Is this true? And the novice says, yes, it is. And the prince says, that's not possible. And goes away. The novice goes and reports his conversation to the Buddha. And the Buddha says, you fool. You can't teach that teaching to this prince. There's no way he's going to understand. He's too blind. In other words, back in that day, people understood what blindness was. Nowadays, they don't. They take their blindness and they advertise it. as something special. That's an obvious case. A lot of the other cases are not quite so obvious. What this means is as you listen to the Dhamma, you look for a teacher, you have to be extra careful. Remember those two qualities that the Buddha looked for in a student. One is that you be really honest, and particularly honest about your own failings, your own weaknesses. And two is that you be observant. You watch things carefully. Try to figure out how you can tell what's true Dharma and what's not, both in other people and in yourself. Primarily in yourself, because that's where it's easiest to be fooled. Because if you aren't observant about yourself, then it's going to be hard to be observant about other people. Your own blind spots in yourself help you miss things in other people as well. So you have to be extra, extra careful as you practice. I know in my own case, studying with Ajahn Fuang, I thought by the time I started studying with him, I'd pretty much tamed my pride. But he found instances of my pride that I hadn't seen. And that was a real gift. I didn't like seeing those things. I didn't like having them pointed out, but I learned from it. He had another student, someone who was really nice, as I mentioned today. She was very polite, extremely helpful to other people. And deep down inside, though, she had this belief that she was a non-returner. Now, Ajahn Fuang tried to get the message through to her in all kinds of ways that this was not true. And she just blocked off his message. Something inside her held on to that. There was something that wasn't quite observant, wasn't quite honest. So now that the true Dhamma has disappeared in the Buddha sense, we have to be very careful when we look for it. Test it as much as we can. Test ourselves as much as we can. The teachings on mindfulness, the teachings on concentration and discernment, they're all there to make you a more reliable observer of what's going on in yourself. So you can see cause and effect, so you can see those truths of inconstancy, stress, and not-self, and use them as tools. When you get the mind really still, and you think that everything is totally still, there's nothing going on in there, watch, look, be very careful, be very discerning. You think you've gone beyond time and space, well, look around. Is there any inconstancy in that state of mind? Any little blips here and there. If there's a blip, okay, what goes along with a blip? That's inconstancy. It's telling you. Okay, something's going on here. If there's any rise and fall on the level of stress, something's going on. It may be quick, it may be subtle. But as I said, you've got to be extra, extra careful in this time now that the true Dhamma has disappeared. In other words, it's not obviously everywhere, and you have to be very selective. So try to develop your powers of observation. Try to develop your mindfulness, your alertness, your ardency, the quality that says, I don't want to come back. And as the John Munn says, be the laughing stock of the defilements. Greed, aversion, delusion, pride, these things have been laughing at us for a long time. And over the centuries, they've managed to create a lot of counterfeit dharma to make it even harder for us to ferret things out. So this throws you back on yourself. And you've got to be really selective, very discerning. Develop the qualities that can make you selective and discerning. That allows you to find the true Dhamma that's still there.